It's Wednesday, February 29th, 2012, and welcome to episode 129 of Tech Talk for Teachers. I'm Tom Grissom.
And I'm Cindy Rich.
Welcome, Cindy.
Thank you.
Happy Leap Day.
Happy Leap Day to you, Tom.
Well, this time I thought we would talk a little bit about some of the digital footprints and things that we've been leaving behind online. One of the hot topics for me this month was the issue of privacy. Right. And there's been a lot of articles, particularly about Google this month, because they've been changing their internet policies. And those of you that have Gmails, you've probably seen this month. If you've logged in recently, you have to accept their new terms of service, which basically what they're asking you to do is all of these different services and things that they offer, they're trying to consolidate all of those different policies down into one.
Right.
One of the things I don't think many people realize is that once you log into your Gmail account, unless you change the setting to tell it otherwise, once you log in, Google tracks all of your web history.
Right. I had no idea that was happening until you showed that to me.
Yeah, and I don't think the average user realizes that. And one thing that brought it up to me was, once you have already signed into your Gmail account, if you go to www.google.com/history, that will show you all of your saved searches that you've done over the entire history of your account. But again, you do have to be logged in order for Google to track that.
Right.
And they do give you an option to clear that history, which I did. That was, the choice that I made, because effective March 1st, which, is going to be tomorrow, they're going to be consolidating all that account information and essentially building a profile.
Well, and you and I had talked about that when we had looked at my computer here at the university, and we did that when I went home last night and looked at my laptop. I did the same thing and found a search history mm-hmm. on there with a different account that mm-hmm. I used through Google. Mm-hmm. And so, again, I'm glad you said that. And it was a search history going back a year or so that there were several sites that I'd looked for that it was quite shocking to me that was still there.
Mm-hmm. And, if you just stop and think through the course of an average day, what you use, that's kind of a profile of what you've done
right.
while you're online.
Right.
Regarding Library of Congress and things and on all of these sites, I know the Library of Congress is involved in an archival project, particularly with Twitter. That's the one I'm most familiar with.
That one received a lot of press. A lot of people were surprised to learn about that, mostly because I know personally I have a Facebook account and I have a Twitter account. Facebook, I feel a little more pressure to be, funny and original mm-hmm. and really be interesting. But on Twitter, I just post the most minute whatever information mm-hmm. that pops into my head. And so I think a lot of us, all of a sudden, when we became aware that all of these were being archived and collected into these vaults mm-hmm. sort of for the Library of Congress, that for about a day, I thought about what I tweeted, and then again, moved on.
Exactly, and that's what happens. We're all busy, and we pause to think about that. But as educators, I think that we need to have these conversations, both
right.
amongst ourselves and also with our students, not to just blindly accept, everything that comes along in the realm of innovation.
And I'm guilty of that. Often I don't have time, and I just agree with the terms. Mm-hmm. I don't even read the terms. Mm-hmm. And so we do need to be aware of that, or at least what we're agreeing to.
Right. And the companies are very careful because they have to be concerned with the legalese with all of it. But it's really starting to be on my radar screen a lot more. But it does give one pause to think that, everything you put out there would be collected, because they call it the Twitter fire hose out there. All this information is just being streamed.
Right.
And with the low cost of story just being archived forever.
Correct. And that's amazing to me as well.
And you had mentioned the other day you were talking about there, we're going back and looking at some election results or something.
Right. Well, they were just, it was, old collections of different election websites from candidates who are no longer even in the public eye. Mm-hmm. But, and we'll probably talk about this more, is that a lot of the digital-born media disappears. And people tend to believe that it's gone forever. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it'll reappear. And
right.
now there are people actively collecting this.
Right.
So we have this historic information. One of the things we talk about with primary sources is email. and how so many of the things that used to be done historically between our leaders via, you know, these well-written letters and several drafts of a letter now are being sent electronically back and forth between these individuals. And are they being archived and saved? Or, you know, are we going to have any view into that whole process of creation of legislation and different things that have happened? Or in this electronic age, is it all just going to disappear and we're just going to have that saved final draft that we don't see the process? And so the whole give and take with those emails. And I know one point was told that, like, Supreme Court emails and things like that were being collected of the justices and all.
Well, it's official business, so it's a record.
But I just can't imagine going through that. Yeah. Reading it and looking for information in the
emails. Some historians, you know, 200-300 years from now will have a heyday with all of that.
But I guess if they're not learning cursive, if they don't know how to read cursive, it'll be okay if it's typed.
Yeah. One of the other things, I'll put a few links out in the notes, because I'm starting to see a few things that Congress is considering legislation-wise. So whenever it gets to that level, you know, public's consciousness, you know, there are issues out there, and the corporations, you know, they want to, you know, be as open as they can, because they don't want to have these different regulations and things to go through.
True.
You know, one of the things also you have out there, I'd like to talk a little bit about this time, is just some of those preservation efforts that are going on out there.
Right. Well, one of the actually, it was really cool, because several years ago we had the opportunity to work with a group from Charleston High School with a project that was going on with this. And so I thought, well, we'd just talk a little bit about some of these processes that are happening right now. And so I did, on the links, we'll have a link to the press release for when they announced the Twitter, you know, information would be archived. And one thing I thought was really cool about that was that they had President Obama's tweet about winning the 2008 election.
Mm-hmm.
That's within that. So what they plan to do, or what I understood, is that, you know how we add our hashtags and keywords that they will be taking those, and as we're going through elections and major events, that any tweets with those hashtags and those key terms or any trends like that, they'll be collecting those into kind of one pot.
Mm-hmm.
And so they can get these diverse perspectives from all over the world about something that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be a new way for us to see how we all react to something that's happening.
Yeah, that's another trend that's going on out there. It's called big data, with all these massive data sets out there. There's a lot of time and energy by, you know, various companies and things trying to go through and organize some of that information. You know, say you're a major corporation and you're concerned with customer service, you can develop algorithms out there to go through and say, hey, you know, such and such customer is complaining about our service. What can we do, to address the issues and fix it? But with things like Twitter, you also have additional data points, because depending upon who that person is making that post, they may have more influence than, you know, one person or another.
Sure.
So you want to probably direct your attention to those people, you know, in Twitter's case, that have a lot of followers, because that message is going out to a large number of people versus, you know, person that maybe has 20 or 30 followers. There's different impacts on
Absolutely. That. Absolutely. And so, yeah, this is really neat, because if any of us that have ever been interviewed by a newspaper or a television or anything like that, when you know your words are going someplace to be kept, you stop and we really think about what we say and how we present it. And I think Twitter is going to give this whole new look at what is happening, because there's no holding back the emotion that first gut reaction.
Things are done instantaneously. You know, the large majority of people, I'm sure, out there is just thinking, you know, it's one and done.
And how many celebrities have we seen that have made off-the-cuff comments that really came back to bite them, because they didn't think before they would tweet? And that, so this is going to give a whole new dimension to these historical events, and I can't wait to see how the Library of Congress is going to present a collection of tweets maybe after the next election, and how we as the general public can have access to it and use it and check it out. And of course, we'll all be looking for our own tweets within those.
Okay, let's talk a little bit. You have down here on your site talking about Archive It.
Right. Well, and actually I skipped right over a part. I got so excited about the Twitter. there is a whole section within the Library of Congress on digital preservation. And you can check that out, and anybody that wants to, and see. A lot of it's very high level, and it's still in the development stage. So,
well, we, you know, this has never been done before. And one of the things that I worry about in my area on the technical side of things, we have all these different formats. And we were talking a little bit before the show. You know, we've gone to all this effort. You know, the Internet was designed out there to be, you know, widely accepted, World Wide Web. And we have all of these standards developed out there. But it seems to me kind of the trends and things that are going on out there, not to get too technical out there, but the HTML5 language, which is really starting to become prevalent on the web, it's just the natural outgrowth. So this is like the next generation. There are a lot of companies that are kind of going out there. It's like, yeah, we want the open standards, but yet we want to have everything within our control. And we were talking about ebooks as kind of an example there.
And right, the formats and...
Because in the last 2 months, you know, just some really exciting news out there. Apple came out with, in January, with their iBooks announcement with some new iBook authoring tools, which look fantastic. But they also kind of have the price of you're locked into that proprietary format. And then, you know, you'd need to be buying an iPad. And then whenever they change the format, like next month, they're going to be coming out with the iPad 3. And that's not going to be compatible with, you know, the iPad 1. And you're just constantly going through this technology, you know, revving this technology out there. And the same thing's true with Amazon and the Kindle. You know, Amazon's a proprietary format. So whenever you're going out there trying to make an educated choice of, like, which way should I go? And, you know, I think that we, as educators, again, need to have this conversation about keeping some of these open standards out there so that things are cross-platform.
And we're not limiting what someone can access.
Right. Not limiting, not getting locked into things, and giving that choice out there to consumers, because we've not been here at this point of history, short of if you would look at it as if it was a language issue, you know, if you had something... You know, you're locking, if you write something in English and, you know, someone's speaking Spanish, you're locking out that entire, I mean, it's kind of the same thing.
It is. And you and I talked about it. I was telling you how on my iPad that I had to download a Nook app because I had a Barnes & Noble gift card that someone had given me. So I have, you know, several book apps on my iPad. And it would be nice if I could just open them all in the same one. But it's very nice that I can even do it.
Yeah.
And that, you know, it's a very real possibility at some point where I won't be able to do that. And I, you know, we will need more than one. It kind of brings to mind, remember when the lines were clearly drawn between schools that had Mac or Apple and your PC schools? And, you know, they were so separate, you couldn't do things interchangeably.
But the open standards have kind of alleviated that issue on trading the files. But it seems like we're going back that way.
It does. It really does. It feels like we're sort of going down that same path. And people are, you know, when something's going well, everybody wants to profit from it. But... you know, it's just bad when the consumer and schools suffer for it. Especially now we're talking about more and more textbooks being in this format.
That's the next natural technology evolution out there, where everybody's going with it.
Right.
And, you know, there's kind of this gold rush land grab type situation, I think, going on out there now.
So you can't help but wonder, are these companies that do tablets and readers going to, you know, have these contracts with certain universities, certain schools, and they only sell theirs, and you have to get everything through it. So it's this whole new dimension of school administration and how schools are going to handle these things.
And getting locked into contracts at that point, because, again, it's a little bit different situation, because if you're buying something, you know, we talk about one-to-one programs out there. If you're buying something, who owns that textbook? Now it's the student versus the school. So that whenever your brother or sister comes along the line, you know, technically that purchase, you know, belongs to that one individual locked into that one device. So suddenly, suddenly we've lost some of that sharing. And I know there are many schools around here that have textbooks 10 years or older.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, in these tight budget times
right.
out there. So, you know, the economics and things, this is all working itself out. You know, it's offered some wonderful possibilities, but we really need to be smart and think our way through some of these issues that we know are out there. And the format's a huge one. The accounts of whatever's going to a student, we haven't worked out. It seems like everything's moving toward this subscription model or license model that you really don't own anything anymore when you move,
That's true, right.
You move something from analog world to the digital world. You know, we talked about this in the past on some of our when we had an episode about ebooks. They put an artificial restriction that, you know, a library can only check an ebook out, you know, like 26 times or something. Once you reach that, you need to buy another one. And that's just a, you know, a that electronic copy doesn't wear out like, you know, a physical book
True.
Does.
True, yeah. And that's interesting because, again, you know, people need to make money. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's some also some very interesting resources. I might throw a couple of links out there. What's called OER, Open Education Resources, where right. a lot of educators are getting together and just developing. In fact, I will put a link in the show notes. The state of Utah just adopted some OER textbooks, which are 100% completely free and open.
That's awesome.
And because they are in a variety of formats, it doesn't matter whether you have an Android or an Apple or a Windows machine, that they're cross-compatible or cross-platform that will
sure.
work on all of those. But this has got to be a huge issue that I'm sure people of Library of Congress are, you know, just constantly struggling with because the innovation
exactly.
pace is so fast.
And how do you keep, you know, it's just like we had talked about previously, too, about, you know, the old floppy disk
mm-hmm.
and the different, I found a zip drive mm-hmm. or
but
zip disk.
But those were happening over a period of years.
Right.
And now it seems about every 6 months.
It's every, the rules change.
Yeah.
So that's true. And that's why one of the nice things about, you know, what is online right now at least is available in a format we can all get to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so steering us back onto the topic where we started.
Yeah, I just don't want to lose the fact that, you know, whenever you click on something that you're not going to have, that's one reason with the Adobe Flash and all of the things, you know, people are trying to get away from that because that required a plug-in to download, you know, something proprietary.
True.
But yet it seems like we're kind of doing the same thing when we go to all these different stores and things and, you know, having to sign up with the accounts.
So the one thing that we complain about, we're just doing more and more of it.
We've replaced one with
we have
another. Yeah,
we have.
And what did we solve in the process?
So yeah, it's going to be very interesting, and you know, we I guess we'll just work through it as we go.
Yep, we've not been here before, so that's
nope.
what makes it fun.
It does, and it just seems to get more exciting all of the time too, and so that's a good thing. Well, going back into the web archives. You know, this is, ta-da, something you don't need a special plug-in or anything for. But one of the sections within the Library of Congress, this is pretty new, so there's just about a dozen collections in there, but they do have a web archive because they realized that this, you know, we've all done it where we've gone to a website to look at something and then went back, and it was either gone or it was replaced with new material, and it was all just gone.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't find it at
all. And blogs
all.
Are really bad about trying
Absolutely,
to
blogs are. And so we realize that we need to be hanging on to these things. Somebody needs to be archiving them. And again, like I was talking about with the candidates and things, that if somebody ran for election, they lost and decided to get out of it, the website was taken down.
Mm-hmm.
And we never saw that material again. So they decided we need to start cataloging these things and hanging on to these items. The Library of Congress did it in their web archives with some of the major issues. They have one on the crisis in Darfur and, you know, major events like that. But they have one on the transition between the popes in 2005. And also different elections. So if you go into, say, for example, the 2002 election, you can go by what office someone is running for and then go into a state or region and find. And so just out of curiosity, I was able to find our former governor in Illinois, mm-hmm. his, Rod Blagojevich's page for rodforus.com and see what, you know, he had posted on that site. And all of these things are great for classroom for students to review. Mm-hmm. And these would be gone mm-hmm. if, you know, somebody wasn't collecting these. So they've done this with these major events. And that's good because then we get the big media events and we see these things that are happening in our country. But there's really a lot to be said about our personal interest and things like that. So from the Library of Congress, I kind of eased into Archive It. And Archive It is really a neat site to go to. There's kind of three within the one and that. But we worked with the Archive It program. The library set up, they had a K-12 project they worked on, and we'll have a link to it. We worked with three different groups of students at Charleston High School, and they had schools from across the country, but they just kind of wanted to get an idea of what high school-age students were looking at. And so they archived these web pages, mm-hmm. and they look like they did on the dates they were archived. Some of them may not have images, but you'll have the text.
Right.
And so the students we worked with had a real kick out of it because they thought it was neat that at 17 years old, what they were looking at was being archived mm-hmm. and that, you know, they were excited to see 20 years down the road or even 10 years if they could look back at that and see why they were looking at it, whether it was looking at colleges or careers or homework assignments or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And but these sites are being preserved. There is a site called Archive It. And it's really an interesting site that they are collecting websites over time, but they've also grouped them into some collections. And that's really helpful as well, sort of like what the Library of Congress did. So you can go to archiveit.org, and there's a link that's show all collections. Right now they have almost 1,700 collections, mm-hmm. and you can go through those and sort them by the name, by who created the collection, or you can search for text.
Okay, I've not been out here. This is a new site to me.
Oh, well, yay.
Yeah.
So, but you can go in, so you can put in a term, or if a student, you know, is doing research on a certain project mm-hmm. and wants to see what is happening, you can put these terms in and see how these different collections give information for that. So this is a really neat way to do research and mm-hmm. get information from a variety of topics mm-hmm. or a variety of sources. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm more familiar with that Wayback Machine at archive.org.
Well, right, because from the Archive It homepage up in the top, you know, it's a service of Internet mm-hmm. Archive.
I see that, yeah. Yeah, so they're using that database to, okay.
Correct.
Okay.
And so archive.org is one that a lot of people have used. Mm-hmm. And that's where we find the Wayback mm-hmm. Machine. And so sometimes there are things that we can't find in the Library of Congress, we can't find in other sites mm-hmm. that we know are out there. And this maybe gives you an opportunity to access those.
Yeah. The one thing that that always amazes the students whenever I show them the Wayback Machine is, again, it just really drives the point home that even though those machines have been long decommissioned and, you know, taken to the trash heap, they no longer exist, that data still does exist out there.
Right.
And
right.
I always like having my students who, you know, are going to be future teachers punch in their the web address for their high school that they came through.
Oh,
and said,
sure.
Let's take a look back about, you know, 2002. And it makes a lot more sense to them now because then we take that conversation to Facebook with the new timeline feature.
Oh, yeah.
So now they can, now they're starting to understand a little bit more that these digital footprints are truly leaving footprints, that, you know, you can go back and catch some of this material that most people, once again, think is, you know, long gone out there to the ether.
Exactly.
It just happens to be recorded on hard drives out there.
Exactly. And we think the big things in history are going to be out there, but it's not necessarily so. Mm. There are a lot of things that are obscure that you have to know what you're looking for to find it. And somebody looking in just the right place for the right thing is going to come across those items. And I, like I said, I was just amazed of the movies and the different, you know, and this 1960 Kennedy-Nixon debate mm-hmm. that was available on there. And it was, you know, a couple of different file formats, MPEG 2.
Well, and the, you know, the other thing that's, you know, it's kind of funny. It's not really funny, is not the right word. But going back through those archives, I see a lot of Real Media Player, which was big
right.
in the 1990s. You know, those are the issues, the technical issues that we have to deal with. It's kind of like, you know, if you have something on an LP record, you know, how many people have record players anymore to play that back?
And exactly.
It's that evolution of technology, and Library of Congress must face that all the time.
Oh, even, you know, things at home with our VHS mm-hmm. tapes that now we've yeah. all had to convert over to DVD.
Exactly, and I think, you know, we're kind of getting used to that. Well, here comes another, you know, technology revolution. Let's take it from this format to the next format, because if you don't, you know, there's a good chance that you aren't going to be able to get to that older technology
sure.
unless you happen to have that, which, you know, there's not much of a chance. Although, I mean, here in our media services department, I know that they keep very old, you know, equipment that's not really any good for anything else except for that rare occasion where somebody may need it.
Need something converted in.
Or, yeah, or like microfiche machines, you know.
Oh, yes.
Just, I mean, those are just specialized devices that were, you know, created to solve a problem, yet have
right.
created another problem.
Oh, and our libraries are busy digitizing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know here at Booth Library on campus, there's a huge, you know,
right.
there's a division, and that's what they're doing, digitizing
right.
resources.
Which,
and,
you know, once again, just another argument out there for those open standards that are open and free out there that aren't wrapped in these proprietary wrappers out there to do. You
nailed it. You nailed it.
Because, again, just think, I'm just thinking, you know, in the future, looking back, what people are going to think. Because, you know, as we go from the analog to the digital, it's like, oh, I have an Amazon ebook, or I have an Apple iBook, or I have a Nook, you know, Barnes & Noble Nook type format.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are all proprietary formats out there, and you have to have that software or device to access it.
That's right. You're right.
So.
And so we had, how do we make ourselves proactive and aware and arm ourselves with knowledge ahead of time
mm-hmm.
so we make good decisions and don't just buy the one that's on sale
right.
or something like that.
Right.
And make the right choices.
Yeah,
and also, we don't want to own four different ones
right.
in our families.
And, you know, I certainly had, you probably had the same experience where you end up buying the same bands, you know, over the years
exactly.
as you go through the different media.
Right, right. So we've all done that.
Yeah.
And yeah, there needs to be a way
yeah.
that it's going to go a little more smoothly.
And I think, you know, I'm starting to hear more and more conversations about that. And like I said, I've been a little bit more attuned to the ebook market because that's such a rapidly changing field right now. But, you know, I do worry that we're making some of the historical mistakes that, you know, I hope we have learned from.
Well, and hopefully that not only are the money makers making the decisions,
mm-hmm.
but also the people that are using it, you know, that there's a lot of input
mm-hmm.
From these different individuals. But when you have a product that comes out that's $500 and somebody else creates another project that's affordable
mm-hmm.
product at $250,
mm-hmm.
people are willing to, you know, cut what they have access to save that money, or they just can't afford.
Mm-hmm.
And that's too bad, because then that divide, you know, that we call the digital divide, and we've seen all this research, especially recently, that income is a huge
mm-hmm.
cause of conflict in a school. And so here we go again.
Right.
We're limiting the kids who, and our students and our families, who don't have the financial resources
right.
to get the top end.
Yeah, we have to be aware of that at all times. So.
Sure. And so, yeah, we want to find resources that are available to them. And, man, that's one of the best things about the Internet.
Absolutely, yeah.
I know. You know
I guess that's what I'm thinking. We have such a wonderful opportunity here. We're kind of at a crossroads here of which way are we going to go.
How do we make sure we're doing it right?
And how do we go forward, yeah.
Exactly, so we're not causing more of a divide, that we're
mm-hmm.
we're putting tools in the
mm-hmm.
hands of all of our students
mm-hmm.
and things like that. So, that's a great point, Tom.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and wrap it up on this point here. So I want to thank you for coming in and sharing all of your knowledge and things. And you've got a lot of good links, as usual, again. So we'll put those out in the show notes.
Wonderful. That's just some fun stuff to just play with.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
for our technology picks of the week this week. Cindy is still with us here, so I think I'll just turn it over to her. And what do you have for our technology pick of the week? What's caught your interest this week?
Well, I am brand new to this new social tool on the internet, and noticed that everybody around me was using it, and all of my friends, and just really wanted to check it out, and am amazed. It's the Pinterest website.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I kept seeing all of these, you know, handy crafty things my friends were doing. Mm-hmm. And all. And I was like, well, that's pretty cool. Then I started seeing a couple of things that teachers were adding on there. So I did sign up just this week, got my own Pinterest
mm-hmm.
Pinterest account.
You're pinning your interest, there I you think, is go. Where the name
exactly.
came from.
Exactly. And so I did. I signed up, got my first account. I'm ready to go with that. Learned how to put the little shortcut in my toolbar so mm-hmm. I can pin things. Created just two boards. One was about my yard mm-hmm. with landscaping and gardening things. But
so the idea behind this is like a virtual bulletin board, like a cork bulletin board?
Literally. I mean, you put these things up. I posted a picture of my yard. Had people from I had never heard of in my life commenting mm-hmm. on them and you know, giving me feedback.
It's one of the hot tools out there. I mean, I've been seeing a lot.
I couldn't believe it. And so I went in and started looking at the teacher tools. And what a fabulous tool for teachers, because there are whole sections on lesson plans, mm-hmm. subject areas, if you're teaching a certain novel, mm-hmm. content area, anything. And, you know, teachers are pretty, a lot of them, especially elementary teachers, are very creative.
And very visual.
Very visual mm-hmm. and have great ideas, and God bless them, they mm-hmm. are willing to share, mm-hmm. which is awesome. So even if it's not exactly what you want to use in your classroom, it's this starting point mm-hmm. that gets you going. Mm-hmm. And so over the next, you know, few weeks or months, I plan to learn a lot more about it, and maybe I can come back and give a little more educated.
Now, did you have to have an invite for that one?
I did.
Okay. And I'd signed up a while back. I've not used it much, but I think I remember getting an invite.
Right. That surprised me mm-hmm. because it was interesting to me that the team at Pinterest was still Pinterest. Why can't I say that?
It's okay.
I don't know what the deal is. But why, you know, that they would still have that much of hands-on control.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious to see as it grows and
they'll,
bigger and bigger.
They'll release it. Yeah.
Exactly. And so I did. I received an invite. You can also sign up through Facebook.
Yeah,
and
I think
Twitter.
That's driving a lot of it. I see a lot of it on Facebook.
I see a whole lot of it on Facebook.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's just, again, this interest.
But it's just a tool. So, once again, it's how you use that tool. And every, you know, that tool user, it's all in their power.
Right.
You know, how they want to do it. So, there's some fantastic educational applications, as you said.
And everything that I've looked at so far is a source of inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
I've not found any detailed instructions on how to do anything.
But I think what makes it interesting is that social piece of it, that other people are commenting on the things that you post. So that's kind of the different twist of just, you know, posting something up there. And
we see that, you know, a lot of like the home decorating things mm-hmm. and that, and also like the class decorations and ideas mm-hmm. for, you know, you see and people are sharing, I tried this, this failed miserably, but this worked.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, wow, that's great because we're getting actual real application information.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of just seeing, oh, this is nice, do this.
Mm-hmm.
You have teachers saying, you know what, instead of doing that, try this. Or my students really struggled with that part, so I added this step. And so, you know, everybody's collaborating.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can do something that somebody else has already tried mm-hmm. a couple of times.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm really going to get into this and check it out. It's an amazing tool, and it's kind of exciting to see something new.
Yeah, it really is. Keeps you fresh.
It does.
So one that I'll share with you this time is this comes from one of my Twitter friends that I have out on the on Twitter, and this is an open ebook site. So what this is, and again, we'll have links in the show note, but the show notes, this is a link to what's called a live binder. I don't know. Are you familiar with live binders?
I'm not.
It's just a virtual, it's like a notebook that you have different tabs and things across the top, and you're just, you know, similar to Pinterest, except instead of, you know, pinning
photos, images.
Photos and images and things. This is more of a traditional like website where you can go in and just mark different things. So this one's from Karen Fazampar, and I apologize, Karen, if I mispronounced your last name there, but I'll have a link in the show notes, particularly to the Open eBooks tab. This is very nice because this is about open educational resources out there that we were just talking a little bit about, you know, how to share this information back and forth. And what's nice about this particular tab in this LiveBinder site is she has links to a web, a Kindle, and an EPUB account. So where available, different formats for those different devices.
Perfect.
just like we were talking about. And this is all, as I said, we're going through this evolution right now in these different formats. Should mention EPUB. They just released the new EPUB 3 standard out last year. So that's the one that's trying to gain a little bit of traction. And it's allowing us to do things with books. Since we're taking them from analog to digital, you're starting to see the multimedia incorporation.
Sure.
With that, with, you know, video and audio and things. But we've had that for years on the web.
You right.
know, that's what a web page is, essentially.
But we do, you know, I subscribe to a couple of digital subscriptions of magazines.
Mm-hmm.
And I can click on the ad
mm-hmm.
in the magazine mm-hmm. and it takes me to their website, or I can, you know, and so that is taking it in a little different mm-hmm. direction. It's something we could always do.
Well, and what's nice about that is it's downloadable to a local device, so it's accessible when you don't have those internet
Absolutely.
Connections. Although we're moving to that constantly connected, but that's the big reason, you know, for the eBooks, to have those offline, you know, moments. So I'll put that out in the link. There's many different ones. She actually has some tabs out here for specific subject areas: math, science, social studies, open textbooks, open online courses, open professional development.
Wow.
So, you know, give that a look, and I think you'll find many, many good links out there.
Sounds good.
That wraps it up for episode 129 of Tech Talk for Teachers. I want to thank Dr. Rich for sharing about web archive resources and social media and how the Library of Congress is archiving information that we may need in the future. Show notes for this episode and archive episodes are available on the web at the EIU Instructional Technology Center website at eiu.edu/ITC. To leave a comment or suggestion, please send an email to techtalk@eiu.edu. Or leave a comment on the Tech Talk for Teachers blog. Until next time, I'm Tom Grissom.
And I'm Cindy Rich.
Keep on learning.